GetFlashNotes.com podcast, episode number 13. Audiobook summary on 10% Happier. How I tamed the voice in my head, reduced stress without losing my edge, and found self-help that actually works. A true story by Dan Harris. Narrated by Dean Bukhari and brought to you again by GetFlashNotes.com. Welcome to the Flash Notes Podcast, the podcast for busy professionals that need knowledge now. Brought to you by Flash Notes Book Summaries at GetFlashNotes.com, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. My name is Dean Bukhari, your host here at the Flash Notes Podcast, where every week we work to bring you the big ideas and actionable insights from some of the best business and self-improvement books out there to help you succeed in life and in business. So tune in, buckle up, and enjoy the ride as we dive into today's episode right here on the Flash Notes Podcast. What if you could learn to calm your mind, relax under pressure, and de-stress your life without losing your edge? Impossible, you say? Well, that's not what Dan Harris claims. 10% Happier offers a practical way to approach mindfulness in the modern world. Read it if you're a busy person that wants a better understanding of spirituality without having to go on a 10-day meditation retreat to do it. What will you learn? Well, for starters, we'll talk about how to deal with stress more effectively. And by the time you're done with this audiobook summary, you'll also know more about various forms of achieving enlightenment, mindfulness, and how to meditate. So let's jump into the introduction real quick before the big ideas here. Basically, 10% Happier is a kick-ass book for anyone who doesn't take offense to me referring to a book about spirituality as a kick-ass book. Written by news anchor Dan Harris, who does his best to demystify meditation so that busy people in the modern world can understand it and actually use it without having to wear a white toga and go vegan for the rest of their lives. All in all, it's an excellent primer for anyone who's interested in learning more about meditation and how to use it in their daily lives in the most practical and BS-free way possible. It's also worth noting that Harris is hilarious. It's rare to find a book that makes you laugh and makes you think at the same time. But 10% Happier does it. And at its core, this is a book about a daytime talk show host who's highly ambitious, addicted to drugs, incredibly competitive, and on the brink of a total life meltdown until he has an on-air anxiety attack, which prompts him to go to therapy, sober up, and to eventually agree to embarking on a spirituality-themed journalism project imposed upon him by his boss, who, by the way, was legendary news anchor Peter Jennings. So Harris' spirituality-themed journalism project gave him the opportunity to learn about and to interview prominent religious figures and self-help superstars like Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, and the infamously controversial pastor-turned-bisexual drug addict Ted Haggard. After a long string of stories filled with religious figures who take hypocrisy to the utmost highest level, and an equally bullshit-fueled series of run-ins with self-help gurus, Harris eventually stumbled upon something that he thought might hold the answers to his own spiritual conundrums. What was the answer that could finally help him tame that overly self-critical voice in his head? Mindfulness. So, what is mindfulness? What mindfulness does is it creates some space in your head so you can, as the Buddhists say, respond rather than simply react. In the Buddhist view, you can't control what comes up in your head. It all arises out of a mysterious void. And we spend a lot of time judging ourselves harshly for feelings that we had no role in summoning in the first place. The only thing you can do, the only thing you can control, is how you handle it. Next big idea, meditation 101. Sit down, get comfortable, and focus on your breath. That's it. That's meditation in a nutshell. That's the basic framework right there. While you're doing this, your mind is going to have a million different thoughts whizzing about your brain like a freight train on a highway. And taming that is what's more important than the actual physical process of the meditation itself. Now, this whizzing of thoughts just flying by your mind and a million different random things whizzing about in your head, this happens to the best of us. When you're observing it happening, don't freak out. Just refocus your thoughts on your breath. That's the key to meditation. And don't think about how you're not doing it right. Don't think about what's wrong with the way that you're doing it. Just do it. Don't kill yourself over it. The more you do it, the better you get at it. What's the best environment to meditate in? Anywhere. Find a space that you feel comfortable enough to put yourself and your thoughts at ease. This might be at your office, a park bench, your living room, whatever. Pick a place to start your practice and resolve to do it for 5 to 30 minutes at a time. Set the alarm on your smartphone, starting with 5 and working your way upwards to 30 and past that if you like. And just do it once a day, every day. And notice how much of an impact it has on your life. So what are the benefits? What are the benefits of meditation? Well, it teaches us to observe the contents of consciousness, that is, the voice in your head, without judgment. The essence of mindfulness is the ability to recognize what's happening in your mind right now. Anger, jealousy, sadness, the pain of a paper cut, etc., etc., without getting carried away by it. According to the Buddha, we have 3 habitual responses to everything that we experience. First, we want it, for instance, cookies. Second, we reject it, for instance, swatting away an annoying mosquito. And thirdly, we zone out, for instance, airplane safety demonstrations by flight attendants. But there's also a fourth option, mindfulness, which is a way to view the contents of the mind, the contents of consciousness, without being attached to them. For example, avoiding the physical urge to literally scratch an itch on your leg while you're meditating. Rather than itching it or doing something about it, the act of only being aware of what it is, of the fact that it's an itch on your leg, is what mindfulness is. Just being aware of it, awareness. And after a little practice, you'll start to rise to the level of being mindful about the more difficult things in life. That is, your thoughts and your emotions. Next big idea. You want to be present. Quote, make the present moment your friend rather than your enemy. Because many people live habitually as if the present moment were an obstacle that they needed to overcome in order to get to the next moment. And imagine living your whole life like that, where always this moment is never quite right, not good enough, because you need to get to the next one. That is continuous stress. Unquote. After interviewing Eckhart Tolle, Harris has a flash of insight about making friends with the present moment. It's not necessarily about being passively present as much as it's about being present about the reality of things. For example, let's say you get upset because you lost a promotion or a business opportunity that you think you deserved. Instead of getting all worked up about losing out on an opportunity, it's worthwhile to consider taking it as a learning experience and deciding on a better or more effective course of action from that moment onward to up your chances in the future of getting that promotion or capitalizing on the next great business opportunity. Some actionable insights from this big idea: the waterfall method. Now, if you're having a tough time getting this whole mindfulness thing, take a quick second to visualize a waterfall. This is a Buddhist method that they recommend and teach to really put into perspective what this mindfulness and meditation thing is all about. Now, let's go to the waterfall here. Visualize it. Just visualize any waterfall. The water from the waterfall represent your thoughts and your emotions. Mindfulness is the space behind the waterfall. Get it? The waterfall, those are your thoughts and your emotions. Say you're sitting behind the waterfall and you're just watching the water fall. And you're just watching your thoughts, watching your emotions fall. That's what mindfulness is. Just being aware with detachment to the contents of your mind as they arise. The thoughts you think, the things you feel, the emotions, all of that stuff. Imagine that those are just streams of water in a waterfall and you're just watching them. That's all being mindful, and that's all mindfulness is. Next big idea. Obsessively worrying about the past and the future prevents you from living in the present. Quote, perhaps the most powerful Tolian insight into the ego was that it's obsessed with the past and the future at the expense of the present. End quote. Another key insight here from Tolle that Harris points out about himself is his track record of avoiding the now. Now is how Tolle, by the way, refers to the present moment. So Harris realized that he'd been sleepwalking for most of his life, dreaming about his goals, dreaming about the future, or ruminating about past problems, pains, or mistakes. Here are some actionable insights about this big idea that you can incorporate into your own life if this is a problem for you. First, so what's the key to combating the ego and staying in the quote-unquote now? You always want to say yes to the present moment. That's it, because there is only this present moment. And when necessary, you want to decide an appropriate course of action to take from the now. That is, don't be blissfully passive about things when you know you shouldn't. If you got to do something about it, plan, take the time, organize it, execute. But don't allow yourself to be away from this present moment, and just because you're worrying about the future or worrying about the past, be in this present moment. Say yes to the now, as Tolle would say. Next big idea, make it rain. If you're having a bad day, or if you're overly worried about some situation in your life, here's a great method to helping you put life back into perspective and to make yourself feel better. The technique comes from a form of an acronym that spells out RAIN. R is for recognize, A is for allow, I is for investigate, and N is for non-identification. Here's how to put it into practice. Step one, recognize. To acknowledge the actuality or the reality of thought, kind of like that waterfall thing. You just want to recognize the fact that it's there. When you have a thought, you just know that it's there. You're having a thought, but you're not screwing yourself over about it. You're not freaking out. You're just recognizing the fact that it's there. Step two, allow. Now, once we've acknowledged our feelings, it's now time to just let them be, or to just let them go, to just watch them fly by or run by like a dog in the park. Step number three, investigate. Next, we want to check out how these feelings and thoughts are affecting our bodies. Are the thoughts or feelings arising in consciousness making your head throb? Are they making your face itch? What's the feeling you're feeling? And finally, step four, non-identification. The final step, non-identification, is meant that seeing that just because I was feeling angry or jealous or fearful, that did not render me a permanently angry or jealous person. These were just passing states of mind. You know, we associate ourselves to so many things without thinking about the fact that we're associating ourselves to them, whether that be like our jobs or our names. For instance, I was recently at a Deepak Chopra seminar, who Dan Harris makes fun of actually a lot in the book, but I was at one of Deepak's seminars and we did this pretty cool exercise, and it's basically a non-identification exercise where we slowly detach ourselves from the things that we think we are. For instance, you start off by saying, I am, and then you say your name. Like, for instance, I am Dean Bukhari. And you repeat that a few times with your eyes closed, and you think about whatever it is that comes up in your mind when you say, I am your name. So for me, it was, I am Dean Bukhari. And then after doing that a few times, Deepak would say, now just say the same thing, but detach your last name from it. So then we would just say, I am Dean, I am Dean. And then after saying that a few times and letting yourself think about that, he would say, okay, now just let go of your last name and your first name and just say, I am, I am. And after saying that a few times and thinking about it, he would say, now just drop the M and just say I. And then we repeat that. And it's basically until the end where he would just basically, you know, kind of a little bit dramatic here, but, you know, he would just be like, all right, now just be there and don't say anything and don't identify with anything. And so, you know, it's kind of cheesy, I guess, maybe if you haven't done it, but if you try it out and you let your mind think about those things, you'll realize that, you know, by the end of the exercise, and I felt it, you know, I kind of felt it, and you would just be sitting there and you'd say, wow, okay, you know, I'm conditioned to think about and to identify with my name, to identify with my job, to identify with what I do. But the truth is, when I slowly let go of those things and disidentify, all we're left with is just this. It just is, just the world. So, but before getting all metaphysical and crazy with it, I'm going to move on, but it's just a fun little exercise that I thought I'd mention here about non-identification. So it kind of relates to this because, you know, just because, you know, you might be feeling angry or jealous or fearful, you know, non-identification says that that shouldn't render you as a permanently angry or jealous or fearful person. That's just a state that you're feeling right then and there. That's not something that you need to identify yourself with, right? So they were just passing states of mind. Next big idea. Respond rather than react. Quote, you create little spaces in your daily life where you're aware but not thinking, end quote. Rather than allowing your thoughts to arise and your body to react to them, try using the pause between stimulus and response to determine your next most effective course of action. Don't let frivolous thoughts and the everyday situations of life control you, because more often than not, most folks live in this thoughtless reaction, reacting to things without pausing, almost as if we were programmed to behave that way. And although gut reactions can be a good thing sometimes, say when we're running away from a lion or something, it's not necessarily a good thing most of the time, especially since we no longer need to run away from lions. Now, if you're trying to develop a good habit, for instance, like the habit of getting up in the morning and going straight to the gym without thinking about it, now that's a good type of thoughtless reaction. And that's not what we're referring to here. We're talking about all the negative thoughtless reactions that we go about throughout the day. So responding, on the other hand, is a totally different thing. When we respond rather than react, we take a moment to pause, to perceive, and to proceed based on what we believe to be the next best course of action. For example, when you react, this is when someone, for instance, to give you an example, cuts you off on the highway. You get really pissed off, you honk your horn, you flip them the bird while you speed by yelling F-bombs at the top of your lungs. Now, this doesn't make you feel any better about the situation. This is very reactionary. Next, respond. Now, to give you an example of, to continue on with this traffic on the highway example, so that's the first, we just gave you the example of reacting. Now let's talk about what would happen if you were to respond instead of react. Someone cuts you off on the highway. You notice how pissed you're getting. This is the reaction. But you pause for a second. You perceive the situation. You say, I'm not going to let this ruin my day. I'm not going to let this person screw my whole day up. And then you proceed based on what you believe to be the next best course of action. You might say to yourself, besides, what good will come of me getting angry and speeding by and cursing this person out and just, you know, flipping them the bird in the first place? What's the good that's going to come out of this? When you ask yourself that, the thing you realize while you're having this inner dialogue is, who knows what the person who cut you off is going through in life? Maybe he just found out that his dad had a heart attack, so he's rushing to get to the hospital. Or maybe he's just a jackass who doesn't care about people. Either way, reacting to this person's behavior puts others in control. It puts that person in control, putting us at the mercy of external events, responding rather than, on the other hand, in comparison to reacting. Responding gives us an opportunity to clarify what's best for us at any given moment. So next time you get angry and are tempted to react, just take a moment before acting out irrationally. Watch the irrational temptation to act irrationally arise, and then just let it go away. This, of course, is easier said than done. It takes a little practice, and sometimes some situations might be easier to respond to than others, but don't let up. Just watch it happen. Then respond accordingly. Next big idea. Enjoy the journey. Quote, the pursuit of happiness becomes the source of our unhappiness. End quote. If you're like me, you like to achieve, to do, to get things done. You want to know why that's a problem? Because sometimes our focus falls into that, quote, when I get X, I'll finally be happy mode. And that's what makes us unhappy. So how do we deal with it? What do we do? Simple. Enjoy the moment. Relish the journey. Smell the roses. Have a blast while you pursue that thing of yours, whatever that thing may be, because happiness is actually the byproduct of pursuing a worthy goal. To put it another way, happiness is what happens when we think we're pursuing happiness. That is, in the form of a clear goal. When we're chasing a goal, when we're trying to go after something, when we're on that journey, we think that finally when we get there, when we achieve that goal, when we make that, you know, achievement or win the medal and finally get the promotion, you know, create $1 million from the business that we're running or whatever it is, whatever goal it is that we are chasing, we think oftentimes that, and you know this, you know, we think oftentimes that when we finally achieve that goal, when we do that thing, when we get to that place, we'll be happy. But the truth is, the happiness comes about as a result of us pursuing that goal. That's what happiness is. Some actionable insights from this idea here. Figure out what you want. Enjoy the journey towards getting it, but don't get so attached to the result, what you want, that if you don't get it, it'll totally piss you off. Don't let that happen. Adjust your expectations. You'll be fine. One more analogy. Try to climb the highest mountain you can. Do your best and enjoy that climb. But don't get down on yourself again if you don't make it to the top. Next big idea. Practice letting go without losing your edge. Quote, studies showed that the best way to engineer an epiphany was to work hard, focus, research, and think about a problem, and then to let it go, unquote. You don't need to lose your edge or become a pushover when you tame your ego. Some people dread the Buddhist concept of quote-unquote letting go because they perceive it as being submissive or soft. To take an example from the book, Mark Epstein, a spiritual role model of sorts to Dan Harris, referred to people he'd known or helped who'd misinterpreted the teachings of Buddhism entirely. denying themselves of orgasms during sex or refusing to order what they really wanted to eat at restaurants in an effort to avoid expressing personal preference. Now, this obviously is nonsense, and it's also damaging to the individual who's trying to do it. Yes, yes, it's important to tame your ego, but not at the expense of your own human needs, and certainly not by becoming a pushover. For example, a meditation teacher by the name of Munindra used to advise his students to keep things, quote, simple and easy. One day, one of Munindra's students saw him negotiating over a bag of nuts in the village market. When the student approached Munindra, asking about whether he was violating his own, quote, simple and easy mantra, Munindra replied, "I said be simple, not a simpleton." Controlling your ego does not mean that you have to lose your edge or stop being a productive member of society. In fact, according to Professor Jon Kabat-Zinn, practicing mindfulness actually makes you more creative and productive. How? By clearing your mind of unhelpful and negative assumptions and routines, thus opening up the space for new and positive ideas and thoughts. One of Harris' adventures, as described in the book, was a 10-day meditation retreat, during which he mentions being flooded with new ideas coming into his mind from every direction. So many, in fact, that he filled up entire notebooks with them. It turned out to be one of the more productive moments he'd ever experienced. And it was the result of thinking less, not more. Interestingly, one of the most important discoveries that the author made on his journey to tame his ego was that the high levels of stress or the need for competition weren't necessarily a necessary aspect of being successful. They weren't necessary to motivate him, and they weren't necessary to fuel his drive. Quite the contrary, in fact. He found that it was a much more satisfying exercise to control these urges than to indulge in them. Closing notes. So the key takeaway here. The modern society and culture that we live in today bombards us with information coming at us from pretty much every conceivable direction. Something seems to buzz, bing, or flash almost every other minute, pulling our attention from here to there, and all the while without ever really getting anywhere. This sends a wide array of stress-inducing chemicals like cortisol surging through our brains and bodies, which eventually leads us to a sharp decline in our physical, emotional, and mental well-being. Bottom line, this kind of stress is making us really, really sick. One way to deal with this is medication. This method, unfortunately, is only a band-aid. A better, more sustainable method to handling all this stress is by practicing meditation, which leads to a healthier, more compassionate, and mentally stable lifestyle, bursting with fulfillment and bursting with purpose. Actionable insights. Maximize mindfulness and compassion for yourself and others through metta meditation. First, by envisioning yourself in your mind's eye and repeating the following set of mantras. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. And may you live with ease. Next, repeat the same set of mantras for other people, namely the following individuals in the following order. First, a benefactor or a dear friend. First, a benefactor, rather, that is a random person, just anyone. A dear friend, a neutral person, a person you have difficulties with or dislike, and then all living beings. So you want to tell them, you want to just repeat this first, this sequence of metta meditation to yourself. May you be happy, or may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be safe, may I live with ease. And then you want to repeat that same set of mantras for a benefactor, that is someone, anyone, just pick someone. And then you want to do it for a dear friend, and then a neutral person that you don't necessarily find just absolutely close to you or too distant, just a neutral person, maybe a coworker. And then you want to do this exercise for a person that you have difficulties with or dislike. And then finally, you want to do it for all living beings. You just repeat it. So when you do this for other people, you use the word you. When you do it for yourself, use the word I. Now, although this might seem like it's just like fluffy and hard or weird at first, you'll really be pleasantly surprised at the peace of mind that it brings into your life. To put it another way, don't knock it till you try it, all right? This was an audiobook summary brought to you by GetFlashNotes.com, narrated by Dean Bukhari, on 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works, a True Story, by Dan Harris. If you enjoyed today's episode of the Flash Notes podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you took just a minute or so to review our podcast in iTunes. And if you're interested in learning more about Flash Notes book summaries, come on over to getflashnotes.com. Again, that's getflashnotes.com. And you can sign up for $1 and get access to business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. Thanks again for listening. My name is Dean Bukhari, and I will see you on the next episode right here on the Flash Notes podcast.